With the fifth pick in the 2020 NBA draft, the Cleveland Cavaliers select Isaac Okoro from Auburn University.
Yeah, that was the announcement last night. And Chris Fedor, Cleveland Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com, nailed the pick last night with his sources before it came out. I was throwing darts at the wall with a blindfold and just added him into the three guys I thought they might land. Little did I know it was going to be Okoro over Avia and Obi Toppin. And so let's get Chris on with us right now via the Wake'em Way hotline. And Chris, were you surprised that they passed on Denny and Obi to take Isaac last night?
I wasn't, actually. Guys, throughout the course of this process, the Cavs didn't really rank it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, a big board like that. They did it in tiers. They had Tier 1, Tier 2, Tier 3. And to my knowledge, Tier 1 was the usual, Anthony Edwards, James Wiseman, LaMelo Ball. In Tier 2, I was told throughout the process, was a big cluster of about 5, 6 guys, and they were having a really, really difficult time ranking those within that cluster. And for some, it was Isaac Okoro. For others, it was Denny Avdija. For others, it was Obi Toppin. And there just wasn't really a consensus. And I was told on Monday when the team gathered to put together their final rankings for their big board, there was still a lot of debate. And that changed over the next couple of days. So I just felt like the Cavs were going back and forth trying to figure out how to rank the guys within Tier 2. But I feel like Denny was never one that they were going to get a consensus on because he was more polarizing. And Isaac Okoro was somebody who was liked by a lot of different people in that front office. And if they're being honest, it probably went down very close to the wire. And I think Okoro to them was the best match of everything that they wanted out of this pick.
Even though he can't shoot real well at a wing position. I made the mistake last night saying that he's a 3-and-D guy, but he only shoots 29%, and people right. jumped all over me because of that, Chris. And this is a shooting league. I know he's great defensively, physically. He's gifted and everything, but he can't shoot if he's going to play on the wing. How do you take a 3-and-D guy if he can't shoot?
Well, here's the thing. They will admit that he can't shoot, and they'll say that it is a problem, and I don't think they can run from that. I don't think anybody would run from that. The numbers are the numbers. The problems are the problems. But just because a guy can't currently shoot threes doesn't mean he's one-dimensional on offense. And I think that's the argument that the Cavs will make. There are plenty of other ways that guys can score. There are plenty of other ways for guys to be impactful on the offensive end while the outside shot develops. On top of that, the Cavs believe strongly in their player development program. They took Jetty Osman when he couldn't shoot and turned him into a 38% three-point shooter. Now, is he a great player? No. He's a backup. He's not a starter. I think a lot of people will say that. But he has grown immensely with the Cavs as an outside shooter to a level that maybe even surprises some people. Colin Sexton couldn't shoot coming out of Alabama. He shot 33% from three-point range. Now he's a 39% three-point shooter. Larry Nance Jr. couldn't shoot when he got here from Los Angeles. Now he's shooting threes at a 36% clip. So the Cavs feel strongly, one, about their player development program, and two, about if the guy's shot isn't broken and if he has the work ethic to become a better shooter, they believe that that is a correctable flaw. And they believe Isaac Okoro's shot isn't broken. It's not Michael Kidd-Gilchrist where he's got this funky hitch or something along those lines. He just right. needs to work on little things, and they believe that he can impact the game on the offensive end along with the defense in other ways to still not be a liability on that end of the floor.
When I look at this draft, I think of a couple of things, and I think about the Cavaliers, who I really want to get more physical and more active, especially defensively, and I think of Colin Sexton coming out, like you mentioned. He wasn't known as a big scorer, and we thought, oh, he's so right. quick, and his defense is going to be great. I think they're thinking in the same terms in this year's draft. Am I on the right pace here?
Yeah, I mean, I think to some degree. Here's the thing about this draft, guys. I feel like you can talk yourself into and out of every player in the top 10, basically in the same sentence. And I don't think there was anybody that really stood out for
right.
the Cavs with the fifth overall pick that was the perfect player. Everybody was flawed. You know, Obi Toppin can't play defense. Mm-hmm. Denny Avdija played against lesser competition in the Israeli Basketball League, and he was one player in the IBSL, and he was a completely different player in the Euro League. Anthony Edwards, he never won anywhere. He didn't win in high school, didn't win in AAU, and didn't win at Georgia.
Huh.
LaMelo Ball can't shoot. So, like, you could go down yeah. that list, and the same thing with Okoro, and I think the Cavs feel like the most correctable flaw of all of these guys that they were looking at was Okoro's shot. And on top of that, he can still be an effective offensive player. He is an elite finisher at the wing spot. He made 64.2% of his shots at the rim this season in the half court. That was the second best among all top 100 wings in this year's draft class. So I think they believe in the kid, and I think they believe that he's going to get better.
Chris, has the Euro game caught the NCAA?
I think in some leagues. There are a lot of people that feel like the Euro League itself, the highest level of the Euro League, might actually be right below the NBA and above college basketball.
Wow.
So I think, one, it depends who you ask. But I think one of the reasons for that is because there are former NBA guys playing there, right? So in the case of Denny Avdija, he had been playing against pros and with pros since he was 16 years old. Isaac Okoro couldn't say that. Obi Toppin couldn't say that. Some of these other guys couldn't say that.
So doesn't, I mean, in a year where there was no NCAA tournament, doesn't that make him more ready to play a la Luka Doncic, a la Giannis Antetokounmpo, having played against grown men and former NBA players and playing not great, Chris, but pretty well?
Without a doubt. That was one of the things that was on his side. People felt like he would be better prepared. That his experience playing overseas would allow him to make more of an impact in year one. But the Cavs didn't go into this process saying, like, we need a specific position or we need a guy who's going to be the best player for us in the 2020-2021 season. Right. You know what I mean? Like, they didn't draft Isaac Okoro because he was the best defender or because he played a position that they needed most. They drafted him because they felt like he was the best mix of talent and fit and position. Whereas Jetty Osman or Denny Avdija reminded them, in some cases, a lot like Jetty Osman, and they needed a skill set and a talent level potentially that they don't already have on this roster.
Chris Fedor is our guest right now, breaking down the draft last night, the Cavaliers and how they stand. Chris, you think about this team, you think about this rebuild, and you think about the draft last night, and the thing that enters our mind is the fact that we know it wasn't a great draft, but at the same time, mm-hmm. we're wondering, was there any legitimate interest in any other NBA team to have moved up, taken that number five pick, or did it really matter to the Cavaliers? Because does it really matter if you get a couple of veterans on this team, it's not going to make you that much better, and it's not going to make any sense for the rebuild as well, correct?
The Cavs had a lot of conversations about the number five pick. I was told that the New York Knicks reached out about the potential of moving up from number eight to number five, offering number eight and 23. The Cavs wanted more than that. They maybe
Why?
Wanted the Knicks to throw in because I think they really, really liked towards the end of this process, once it got down to the nitty-gritty and they started to whittle it down, they really liked Isaac Okoro, and they felt like he would have been gone at number eight if they would have dropped that far down.
Really? So
the Cavs also had conversations with the Boston Celtics, who were interested in moving into the top 10 using their three first-round picks. The Cavs had conversations with the Detroit Pistons at number seven to see if the Pistons were willing to move up two spots. I felt like that was more if Patrick Williams would have fell past Chicago and been on the board, and then Detroit would have tried to go up. But the opportunities were there. It's just the Cavs felt like there was too much risk in moving down to number eight and losing out on Okoro.
All right, I'm going to go back to that, Chris, because Jeremy Wu for SI.com, I'm going to read you what his report said today. Cavaliers, who had spent a good chunk of the day fielding offers for their pick, as I understand it, decided to stay put and take Isaac Okoro. That wasn't necessarily a bad pick, although it had seemed in recent days like he was set to fall toward the latter half of the first round. So, now, again, this is coming from a writer, not somebody inside an organization, but I read that somewhere else, too, where, you know, he was considered end of the lottery, not beginning of the lottery. So when you tell me that they were afraid to drop down three spots, which would have netted them another first-round pick, and I read these things, it makes me wonder.
Cavs did not believe that. I texted somebody who was inside Cleveland Clinic Courts at 7:45 last night, 15 minutes before the draft started. And I said, if you move back to 8, do you think you can get a Coro? He said no. They felt like the Atlanta Hawks at number 6 would have taken them.
Okay. All right. Well, they would know more.
They also were worried about the San Antonio Spurs at number 11, jumping up to number 7 with the Detroit Pistons, one pick in front of them. And San Antonio took a 3-and-D guy in Devin Vassell at number 11, and they thought San Antonio would have moved into the Detroit spot at number 7, one pick in front of them, to take a Coro. So they just did not feel... based on their intel, that dropping back was worth that gamble.
Chris, do you think that the Warriors would have taken Wiseman had they known the severity of Klay Thompson's injury last night at 8:15 or whatever time it was when the draft took place?
Yes, I absolutely do. Because right now they're having conversations about trying to get Kelly Oubre Jr. So I think they felt like the upside of James Wiseman was too great to pass up at number 2. They need somebody like him. Honestly, they do. They need a rim runner, a rim protector, somebody with size. They've used multiple first-round picks on that particular position over the course of the last 5 years, and they haven't gotten it. So to have somebody like him who has elite defensive traits right now and the potential to maybe be a two-way player in the future and lead them into the next era of Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green towards the end and him coming into his prime, I think they probably would have made the same pick. There were some people that believed Wiseman was the best player in this draft overall.
I did. From the little things that I saw of him, and Chris, this was the one, I got to say, and great job by you. And for everybody out there, please read Chris's article today about Okoro. Great insight from him, as well as what the Cavs were thinking as to why they selected him. Chris, this was the first year in a long time that I didn't dive deep into it because there was no March Madness, right?
Yeah.
The draft lasted this long, but so many other things were going on. I didn't dive into it. I didn't have as much time, so I wasn't as versed in all of these guys as I have been in years past. I know that's, you're beat now, so, you had to be into it. But I thought of all the guys, if the Cavaliers could have come away with one guy, I would have taken the chance. I would have rolled the dice on Wiseman because of, the size, his athleticism. He's not a bad outside shooter for that size. I'm not saying he's going to step out and hit the three, but still, that's the one guy I would have rolled the dice on if I could have got my hands on him.
Yeah, I think there were people inside the Cavs organization that at the beginning of this process were wondering if he was going to fall to 5 because, he's polarizing. He played 3 games in college. 25 of his 28 made shots were dunks or layups. What do you do with that in terms of an evaluation? And there's questions about the kid himself and whether he quit on the program and his teammates. So there was some thought originally because he was so polarizing, like Anthony Edwards being polarizing and LaMelo Ball, that maybe possibly he was going to be there at 5. But as the draft got closer, there were people inside the Cavs organization that said there was no way he was getting past Charlotte at number 3. And it was a majority of people that felt like Golden State at 2. And Golden State, great spot, right? They have one down year in the middle of a dynasty kind of going the wrong way. And now they got somebody like that who has all the potential in the world. Like, he's getting comparisons to Chris Bosh. He's getting comparisons to those kinds of players because of his untapped offensive potential combined with the defense that he's already going to bring.
It reminds you of Andrew Luck following Peyton Manning with the Indianapolis Colts. You take 1 year, and next thing you know, you got another franchise. Chris Fedor is our guest. Chris, I want to ask you this question, because we consider last year's draft so much better than this year's. Yeah. You end up with Okoro. Had he come out last year, obviously he's not going to be in those top 3, Zion Williamson, John Morant, R.J. Barrett. Where could he have fallen had he been good enough to come out last year? Maybe top 10, 15, or where?
So this is hard because you're asking probably the biggest DeCoro fan in the city.
That's fine. Hey, if that's the case, so be it, because I'm trying to make myself like this move.
Yeah. I mean, before the draft, I did a list of the top options for the Cavs at number 5, and he was my top one. I thought he made the most sense for the Cavs. I thought he was the best fit for what they want to be as an organization and what they want to be as a team, and I thought he brought things that they simply don't have. Like, he's a winner. I mean, I know you can't quantify that, really, but he has that kind of attitude, right? He has the work ethic. He has the professionalism. He has the character. Auburn was 15 points better than its opposition per 100 possessions when he was on the floor, and they were even when he was off the floor.
Uh-huh.
Like, that's the kind of impact that he can make, not just on the court, but in this organization. So I think those kinds of traits are valuable. Those kinds of traits make you feel more comfortable about a guy and make you okay with some of the flaws that he brings to the table. So to answer your question, JT, I think he's probably, you know, borderline top 10, outside the top 10 in last year's draft. But I'd bet on the kid. I think he's a winner.
All right, let's make comparisons then. What I'm hearing is Kenny says he shoots 29% from the three, good
Correct.
Defender on the wing. What I think of from that is somebody that can maybe grow into a better scorer. And when I think of that, I think Jimmy Butler.
Yeah. So does ESPN NBA draft analyst Fran Fraschilla. I talked to him for a profile that I did on Isaac for Cleveland.com. And that's the one that Fran Fraschilla brought up. I talked to Bruce Pearl, Auburn head coach. He brought up Andre Iguodala. I talked to somebody with a scout that has been watching Okoro since he was a 16-year-old kid who got cut from the under-16 Team USA squad. And he said Marcus Smart. So I feel like Jaylen Brown. I went through and I looked at the numbers of Jaylen Brown in college at Cal and Isaac Okoro 1 year at Auburn, and they are unbelievably identical. And Jaylen Brown has turned into a really good two-way player for the Celtics. And if you remember when he went third overall to Boston, people were like, what? Are you serious? Shot 29% from three-point range at Cal. He couldn't do anything in the half court. But he has worked himself into a 39% three-point shooter or something. I just think there is enough evidence of if the kid works and if his shot is normal enough that only needs small tweaks, there's enough evidence of guys like Jimmy, like Iguodala, like Marcus Smart, like Jaylen Brown, like Kawhi Leonard, who can become better shooters. I think that's a correctable flaw.
Chris, I was at a private workout for Michael Kidd-Gilchrist when he came out, okay?
Yeah.
They had it at Beechwood High School, and so I got to go watch him. And you know, I know that the Cavaliers saw Okoro's workout, and they said, hey, his shot, it's not broken. He looked better. He's already worked on some things. I heard the same stuff about Kidd-Gilchrist, right? And Rich Paul was his agent, right? And so I'm hearing the same stuff about Kidd-Gilchrist back then. Now, granted, that hitch has never been fixed, okay?
Exactly.
And it's ugly where Okoro doesn't have that hitch. But what I'm saying is I heard the same stuff. We know he's a great defender. He was the glue guy to that Kentucky team that won a national championship, right? But offensively, he was challenged, and they felt the same thing, that he in the NBA game, he won't have to shoot as many threes, but that'll get better, and he'll still be able to score. Well, that hasn't happened, and he's barely hanging on a roster as a, you know, an 8th, 9th, 10th guy and a defensive guy. What makes you believe that this isn't as bad as Kidd-Gilchrist? Because I'm looking at that as the worst-case scenario for Okoro.
So here's the thing that I look at, and I was talking to a lot of different people leading up to the draft about this very thing, Kenny. And the way that it was phrased to me, and I thought this was really, really smart, and I don't remember who said this to me, but the way that it was phrased to me is that not all bad shooters are bad shooters because of the same thing. Does that make sense? So
yes.
Michael Kidd-Gilchrist was a horrible shooter because he had a funky-ass hitch in his shot that could not be corrected. Like, that made his shot broken. There was somebody that I talked to that felt like LaMelo Ball's shot is broken. Completely broken. can't be fixed, or if it is going to be fixed, it's going to take 3 to 5 years. Nobody that I talked to about Isaac felt that way about him because they don't think it's a complete overhaul of the shot. They think all he needs to do is get the release up higher and the elbow higher. That's it. Now, obviously, that's easier said than done, but it's not taking a hitch like Michael Kidd-Gilchrist had and completely reworking that sort of thing.
Okay. I hope that's the case because I want this team to be relevant again. You know, this team's rebuilding, and I get the defensive side of it because they need it because nobody else in that team plays defense, okay? Now that Tristan's gone, right? So I get that really stood out, but you also have to be able to score the basketball now in this league.
But he does.
I understand. But we're talking about finishing at the rim, like you said. Does he have the pull-up? Does he have a floater? Or is he only going to score on dunks and layups? And those don't come as easy in the NBA as they do, in college. So that's why I think the rest of his offensive game really needs to develop because guys are just going to lay off him, Chris. They're going to back off of him. And the only way he'll score then is in transition if they back off and he has no J.
Sure. And I think, Kenny, if he was a ball-dominant player like Colin Sexton or Darius Garland, that would absolutely be problematic. But that's part of the reason why the Cavs were attracted to him, because he can have an impact without having the ball in his hands. The Cavs have so many high-usage and ball-dominant players that he can find a way to create offense for himself and his teammates without the ball in his hands. And they don't have enough of those kinds of guys. So, yeah, if he was a ball-dominant guy that was running a whole bunch of pick-and-rolls and the defender went under the pick-and-roll every single time because they didn't respect his shot, that would crater the team's offense, and that would be problematic for him. But that's not how he's going to be used. That's not what he's going to bring to this offense. He's going to be able to set screens. He's going to be able to cut. He's going to be able to move without the ball. He's going to be able to put his head down, attack the rim, and kick out to his teammates. A lot of people feel like he's an underrated passer. A lot of people feel like he's got the explosiveness of a bigger guy than 6'6", 225. Like, I think those kinds of things can allow him to not be a liability early while he continues to work on that outside shot.
Is he a draft plug-and-play starter on this bad team?
So this is interesting because I feel like you can... I feel like if you're talking Dylan Windler, Jetty Osman, and Isaac Okoro, there's a case to be made for all of them as a starter initially. Jetty has the NBA experience. He's got the resume.
I'll pass on Jetty. Go to the next guy. I'll pass.
But he's not 19 years old, Jetty.
I know. I'll pass. I'll pass. Go on to the next guy, Chris. I see Jetty Osman as a ninth or tenth guy. They overpaid for him. It's a waste of money. Sorry. Go ahead to the next guy.
I agree. He's a backup in most cases.
Yeah. Right.
But we're talking about throwing a 19-year-old kid in there without summer league, with an abbreviated training camp. It's just a lot. Dylan Windler is an interesting one. The Cavs are really high on Dylan. Did not play at all last year because, of course, the season-ending injury. He brings things that the Cavs missed last year. Passing from that position, an elite shooter from the outside. And I just think Okoro is the kind of guy that J.B. Bickerstaff is going to have a hard time keeping off the floor because of the traits that he brings that impact winning in a positive way. And because when they're going to run out the backcourt of Darius Garland and Colin Sexton, they're going to need somebody like Isaac Okoro to step up and take some of those matchups on the defensive end against the elite offensive players. I remember last year I was watching the Cavs in one game against the Miami Heat, and we're in Miami, and I turned to Kelsey Russo of The Athletic, and I said, Colin Sexton's guarding Jimmy Butler. Like, what the hell is going on here? But they had to do that because they had nobody else who could do that. They couldn't put Darius on him, couldn't put Jetty on him. It fell on the shoulders of Colin. So if you have a Okoro there, it's not going to fall on the shoulders of the little backcourt. So I think because of that, eventually, it'll be Okoro, but I just think it's a lot to throw at a rookie kid in this kind of offseason when there's not a lot of time to get integrated into this team.
All right, we'll talk about the starting lineup another time, Chris, okay? Because I want to go over that with you and see who the five are.
Well, it's not Osman, according
yeah,
to you.
That's for sure. Absolutely. Hey, great job on the draft. Great job on Okoro. Keep up the good work. Thanks for coming on.